And open your Bibles to John chapter 9. Little side piece. One of the things I'm trying to do with my lessons is present as normal of lessons as I could think of. Not a series, but literally something I did just a few months ago. And I'm also noticing if there's an idea or something that kind of jumps out at me and really is me, for lack of a better term, I'm throwing that out there. There's a couple times in the lessons I've talked about, here's a question that I don't know the answer to. And I've even said, and if you give me an answer to it, I'm going to say it's wrong because it's we shouldn't answer this question. We should work on this question. That's a me kind of thing that's kind of a big deal. And I thought, oh, there's a moment. Let me make sure I get some of those things out there. So some of the less, I usually have my sermons pretty streamlined. And I feel like every once in a while I'm going down. This is something that I think is a big deal. And I don't always do that in every lesson, but I'm trying to do that a few times. Just to give you a sense for... everybody has an idea that's important to them or really annoys them or really thinks everyone in the world is wrong except for me and I'm going to fix the world. That's not a good attitude, but that's a real attitude. And so I've been thinking about those kinds of things just to make sure that I include that. This lesson of the blind man, number one, he's one of my favorite guys in the Bible, and I have to apologize every time that I do a lesson about the blind man because he's not blind in most of the story. But I'm not going to call him the man who was formerly blind. That gets cumbersome. So I'd still call him the blind man, and I feel terrible about it, but we all know what's going on. And he's one of my heroes. He's just so fascinating. He's got great answers. He has good humility. He has good behavior. What I want to look at in this lesson, and it's a little similar to what I did yesterday, Jesus is making connections. There are some who aren't good at connections. He's making connections. He's connecting spiritual to physical and moving towards spiritual out of the physical. He's doing neat connections that way. This is not connections, but conversations. So, you know, pretty similar idea. And this is a story of failed conversations. Just one after the other. This is a terrible chapter. I love the story, but it's a chapter of terrible conversations with really bad consequences. And that's something that I'm pretty passionate about, is not having good, bad, not about, I love terrible conversations. I don't want conversations to be terrible. I want things to go in the right direction, and I liked finding faults so that I could learn what do I need to avoid, what do we need to avoid. So this is a lesson about listening. Sometimes people, instead of listening, they double down and say it more, and that doesn't solve stuff unless it's a homecoming chant. You know, like that's where doubling down and yelling it louder wins. In a wrestling arena, or in a homecoming game, that's where that works. But in realistic life, we need to listen, and that's what this story is about. So I'm going to try to move quickly for the time. I'm going to read verses 1-7 and see if you can find the failure. That's your game. Find the failure. As he passed by, he saw a blind man from birth, and his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Having said these things, he spit on the ground and made mud with his saliva, and he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. Let's just get it out of the way. I do not know why he makes spit mud and puts it on the guy's eyes. That's just weird. It is, I try to find what will be a complicated part of a Bible lesson if with a non-Christian and someone who's new, and I don't have any answer for that. But this is what he does. So while the lesson earlier today is about how normal and fluid and realistic a miracle can be, this one has a weird detail, and I don't know what to do. The Bible has some weird details, and I have to admit that when I'm talking with people. And honestly, I think it's just faith. You know, are we going to be okay with details that seem odd? So that's part of the miracle. And then he comes back seeing. Like, talk about an unfantastic miracle story. We didn't hear anything about it. He washes his eyes, and now he can see. All right, but as far as the failed conversation, it begins with, who sinned? Now, any time that you look at a person and begin with who sinned because you looked at the way a person looks, you've started off from a bad position, right? You know, that's just prejudice or racism or what have you. We should not be operating that way. It does sound like that this was a fairly common kind of a question. If sins result in physical problems immediately in the self or in my children's self, then that would be a dilemma that people would be dealing with and a question that they might be asking. So I don't want to just totally throw the apostles under the bus, because that's part of their culture, but it's not a good part of culture. If we say, who's the problem for this guy's problem? That's just not a good way to be. Some of the questions I think we need to think about that is, what is your purpose? What is your purpose? You can see a person and then say, I've heard this Jesus, that sin is going to result in this in a person or in their children. You can ask Jesus if you are curious about the spiritual condition. But what is the purpose of saying, who's at fault for this man's blindness? That's just beginning things in a bad direction. Who does it serve? Who does that question bless? Honestly, who is served by your ranting on the internet? And that's one of the big things that this makes me think about. I am going to fix it, says everyone who's typing on Facebook. And they don't fix anything. And this is what it feels like to me. Who sinned? Who's the problem? Jesus answers that the works of God might be displayed in him. That's a tough answer for me. I don't want to hear he's suffered his whole life so that Jesus can do a miracle. That's a hard one for Dan Bunting to balance out. I don't know. I don't want to try to answer is that fair or not, because that's God's domain. But that's a hard situation. And so that's one of the reasons why this blind man is really impressive to me. He doesn't seem to hold on to that trouble. He moves forward. And so Jesus is saying, this is for good. This is for God's works. This is for the might of God being displayed. They're asking a question, who's at fault? Who's the problem? What's the, you know, where is the dirt? And it's that constraining, it's that classic Pharisees barring and walling things up. And Jesus is saying about the might of God, the works of God, the grace, the liberality, and the welcoming of God that he offers. And so we can see differences there with these two, with the apostles and then with Jesus. Failed conversation one, it just began badly, right? Maybe they're curious about the spiritual implications, but they asked it poorly. So we need to be careful about the way that we are asking and engaging in things. But then in verses 8 through 12, find the failure. The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, is this not the man who used to sit and beg? And some said, it is he. And others said, no, but he is like him. And he kept saying, I'm the man. And so they said to him, then how were your eyes opened? And he answered, the man called Jesus made mud and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to Siloam and wash. And so I went and I washed and I received my sight. And then they said to him, where is he? And he said, I don't know, with the most sarcastic look I can ever imagine. Like, what was he wearing? He goes, I was blind at the time. Well, how would he ever know where Jesus went? This is one of the funniest moments in the Bible to me. Where is he? Jesus could be standing over there, right? And he wouldn't know. I just think that this is such a funny moment. Okay. So what's wrong with this conversation? They aren't talking to him. Man, we do that. Right? They're not talking to the guy. They say, isn't this him? And they say, yes, it is, and others say, no, but it's like him, and he's in the corner saying, I'm me, it's me, I'm the guy. Like, who would know better? No, you don't know what you're talking about. I mean, there's been so many times, I think it was one of the, like, a New York Times cartoon, let me interrupt your expertise with my opinion, is what the guy says across the table from somebody. And that's the world that we're living in right now. The blind man, he's not blind, the blind man knows if he's the blind man or not, but they are talking about it out here, and it's a mess. It's a mess. He says, I am he, and so then they turn and they ask him, then how were your eyes opened? And that just doesn't sound like, wow, then how did this happen? It sounds like, well, then how were your eyes opened? Why is he under fire? This is another problem that I find myself and other people, we get ourselves into. There's accusation in that question. I don't know how they put it in there, and it might just be me reading into the story. I am he who was formerly blind. Then how were your eyes opened? Like, there's a problem. The problem is, this is a supernatural, this is a hard-to-understand moment, and they are dealing with that hard-to-understand in themselves. I don't understand. What do I do with this? And so they throw it at him. Then how are your eyes open? You make me feel better. Explain to me how you can see. And we do that sometimes, right? He gives his fabulous answer. Well, he made mud. My translation says, anointed my eyes. I don't know if he used such a lovely word for putting spit mud on his face. He anointed my eyes. He told me to wash. I washed, and now I can see. And like, well, where is he? You know, it's not, where is this Jesus so that I too might also fill in the blank. This paragraph sounds like to me, well, how are your eyes open? That doesn't say much. Well, where is he? And they're throwing these things at him. It feels like he's under fire. He just received the gift of God, and he's under fire. And that's a pretty common circumstance, isn't it? I don't know if you felt that, or if you've seen that happen in somebody else, and a conversion or a rededication of one's life, and we're going to do things right, and you or they have this wash of peace and blessings, and this is great. This is great. Why are you upset at me? What's wrong? And the blind man didn't do anything to them. He just is no longer blind, and it feels like it hurts them, or they don't know what to do with it. Why do we challenge the person who is bringing or experiencing or teaching something? And this isn't like, you know, I'm up here, why are you challenging me? That's not the point. When someone is sharing, why do we challenge them? Why do we argue our own thoughts rather than listen? It usually means we don't want to be enlightened, right? And to accuse, well, they're not listening because they don't want to be enlightened, is a rough and a rude and a stern accusation. But the fruits prove whether it's true or not. And all we got to do is look at people's fruits and learn how to see fruits in the mirror. What do I do when people say something that sounds new, maybe is new, I don't like it, and maybe it turns out, talk about the Bible, it might turn out to be something that's wrong. But what am I going to do up until the moment when I've figured out whether it's right or wrong? You know, we need to listen, and we need to care, and we need to be attentive, and that's not what these people were doing with this poor blind guy. We need to be careful. And then in verse 13, I'm going to read 13 through the beginning of verse 18. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had formerly been blind. Now it was the Sabbath day. Oh, great. Take a deep breath. It was the Sabbath day when Jesus made mud and opened his eyes. So the Pharisees again asked him how he had received his sight. And he said to them, he put mud on my eyes, and I washed, and I see. And some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath. But others said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? And there was a division among them. So they said again to the blind man, what do you say about him since he has opened your eyes? And he said, he is a prophet. The Jews did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they called the parents. Okay. That's, again, the people like, well, this isn't making sense, so I'm going to hit you with a hammer. You must not have been blind, or you explain this to me. We see the Pharisees are acting in that situation as well. But it's beginning with this, it happened on a Saturday. Like, oh, for crying out loud. This is going to be a mess. And I wonder if the disciples and the apostles sometimes are saying, Jesus, if you just do stuff on Fridays, like you do something on a Saturday and it creates this trouble. In the lesson in chapter 4, I said that when the Pharisees were about to stir up strife because there was more baptizing going on, Jesus left. And so I do see a lot of instances where Jesus gets out of fights, doesn't want to feed fights, doesn't want to do anything like that. But he defends the Sabbath as the day of liberty and the day of liberation. In Luke 13, you guys untie your ox. And so this lady who he healed, she whom Satan bound for 18 years. I think it's 18 years. It's right for her to be liberated on the Sabbath. And so it's interesting to me where there's a lot of times Jesus, he's not feeding fights, but he does stuff on the Sabbath. I think because it's a day of healing. It's a day of liberty. It's a day of blessing. And he needed the world to know that. So maybe that's why he kept doing things on the Sabbath. They had a narrow definition of the Sabbath. They had a constrained definition of the Sabbath, and it limited their faith, right? And they argue that narrow definition while Jesus is describing the reality of the Sabbath. No, I'm not just being a liberal teacher, Jesus is saying. This is what the Sabbath was about. It was about setting people free from Satan. And so he's not just trying to preach liberally and they're preaching conservatively. He's preaching the truth. It's going to sound like a liberal, right, that phrase. It's a liberal. It's going to sound that way if you have made yourself too conservative. And Jesus speaking the truth is going to sound a little bit more expansive than I have thought in the past. And so that's a challenge for them. And so they're using the Sabbath as a tool to hit people with. Think about, they're eating grain. They're harvesting on the Sabbath. You're doing this on the Sabbath. They use the Sabbath like it's a weapon. And they're hitting people with the Sabbath to try to control, at least control Jesus. I don't know if they were doing that to the nation, but they were definitely trying to get Jesus under their control by hitting him with Sabbath. And they refuse to listen to this blind man. But before that, in verse 16, we have a little glimmer. This man is not from God, some said, and the other said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? All the Pharisees were all terrible. Okay, no, I need to remember. They weren't all terrible. There's some here saying, but the sign happened. They're letting that sign make a difference to them. That was one of the points about the miracle of feeding the 5,000. We need to let that miracle impress us to the power of God. There were some Pharisees who said, I don't like anything that Jesus does. Maybe that's their thought. But he did this. So if he can do this, you know, they're working, then that might mean I need to stop hating everything Jesus does. They're working on that. But because it was the Sabbath, because of this outside circumstance, they refused to listen to the blind man. How did he do it? How did this happen? He gives them the answer. They come back. Well, what do you think he is? He's a prophet. You must not have been blind. Well, that's dumb. That's just selfish and vain. They were letting outside environmental factors, their opinions, their desire to have control possibly, their history and their traditions, they let those factors ruin the conversation before it even started. That's the way we feel. They bring him to the Pharisees and we go, oh, this might not be good. We find out it was a Sabbath and we go, all right, we know it's going to go badly. And so that's that, and that's the way it goes forward. They wouldn't listen to the blind man. What stops their hearing, right? So what stops my hearing? What stops our hearing? Well, often listening means change. And that means I won't listen, right? It's unsettling. It's unsettling my ideas and my outlook and my goals. And so I don't want to listen. Listening means learning. Right? And there is no learning without humility. You have to be humble. You have to let go of yourself if you are ever going to let somebody else's words come in and help you learn. There is no learning without humility, and if you're not humble, there's no learning and there's no listening. And listening means hearing someone outside of your own brain, your own circle, your own comfort zone. Because you can learn stuff from your circle, and then after about 5 minutes, for the next 10 years, you're just repeating yourselves. That's over the top. It's not necessarily that true. You can read a book and teach somebody what you learned in a book. But when you got to get out of that circle, you got to get out of your comfort zone. You have to, again, it's that humility and it's that change. And these guys, these Pharisees, they didn't want to listen to the blind man because he was outside of their zone. He was saying things outside of their zone. He was blind. He must be a sinner. He's outside of their zone. He's not as cool as they are. He must be outside of their zone. And so they're not letting him speak. Listening is hard. And we have to be courageous to listen to people. That's what it takes. Here comes my elder or an elder, you know, some person. I'm going to have to listen to them. They're going to tell me I'm doing something wrong, and I know I'm doing it right. Or some sort of situation like that. This person's younger than me, and they're going to have an opinion about what I'm doing, and clearly I know what I'm doing because I'm older than they are. Here comes my peer, and they're the exact same age as me, so I've got to come up with another reason why I don't want to listen to them. Because older than me and younger than me, that's not going to cut it, and that's what we often do. And we need to be better listeners. So in verse 18, the Jews did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they called his parents. Are they going to believe the parents? Why are they going to listen to these people? All right. So until they call their parents of the man who had received his sight and ask them, is this your son whom you say was born blind? How then does he see? And his parents answered, we know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but how now he sees we do not know, nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him, he is of age, he will speak for himself. And then they pull their hoodie over their face and draw the drawstrings, because that's it, we're done. His parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that if anyone should confess Jesus to be the Christ, he was to be put out of the synagogue. Therefore his parents said, he is of age, ask him. Put out of the synagogue means more than just kicked out of this building. It's an excommunication, the way we use that phrase today. So they are terrified. So this is the fourth failed conversation. His mom and dad bail on him. I'm going to throw them under the bus, okay, for the point of this lesson. But they bail on him. Listen to this, what they say. We know that this is our son. You can imagine, like, the bot on the computer creating this sentence. It is so ordered and without expression. We know that this is our son and that he was born blind. I mean, there is, like, yeah, that's him. And he used to be blind. And they're needing to interrupt the mom because she's trying to go to her son and talk to him. No, she is speaking, or he is speaking, with absolute precision because they're terrified. This is the result of a set of bad conversations and a bad ruling about Jesus. And it's making, again, it's outside circumstances, it's ruining these parents. I hope that they had the decency to talk to their kid afterwards, after he got kicked out. That's where the story's going to go. Spoiler alert. But they don't do it here. It's cold. Even the statement, but how he now sees, we do not know, nor do we know who opened his eyes, ask him. Don't blame us. Who said anything about blame? The tone in everything, the Pharisees and even the people in the city, is where the blame's coming from. The question, is this your son whom you say was born blind, is an accusation. You're claiming it. We don't believe you. And how then does he now see? How can they even answer the second question? So it's a sad moment. Bad listening and bad conversations create fear. There's a lot of fear in this story, right? They're afraid. They're afraid, extra afraid now because of the excommunication threat. It leads to them giving this unloving reaction. they can repent, they can be good people afterwards. I'm going to be awful about them in this paragraph to the point, just to say, look how they're awful in this point. They're running from opportunity. We often end up running from opportunities to help and care and love and protect people because we are afraid. What is this going to lead to? What is this going to look like? What is this going to put onto me? But in 1 John 4:18, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. For fear has to do with punishment, and whoever fears has not been perfected in love. And you can see that they were concerned about the punishment. But the blind man, as we read through, he doesn't care about the punishment. He is only caring about the grace. These are the unintended. Did you think the Pharisees, when they were making this rule about Jesus, do you think that they were hoping that it would like split parents from their kids? Or were they trying to protect people from what they thought was something that was bad, right? These are the unintended consequences. I hope they're unintended. Bad conversations and bad rules and bad thinking and doubling down and a chapter full of people who don't listen. Look at verse 24 now. So for the second time, they called the man who had been blind and said to him, "Give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner." That's not a question, is it? He answered, "Whether he's a sinner, I do not know. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see." They said to him, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" He answered them, "I have told you already, and you wouldn't listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become one of his disciples?" Which is rude. Let's just be honest here. And I'm, yeah, go for it, dude. Do it, you know? Do you want to be one of his disciples? Now, there were some who were debating back and forth. My assumption is the way that the Pharisees and the leadership usually goes is those guys who are wondering are pretty quietly in the corner and not getting, you know, throwing themselves into the ring. That's my guess. He might be addressing and calling to that kind of a concept. Mostly, I think he's throwing a jab at them, and they react to it. Verse 28, and they reviled him, saying, "You are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we know not where he comes from." The man answered, "Why, this is an amazing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." And they answered him, "You were born in utter sin, and you would teach us?" And they cast him out. Verse 34 isn't a successful win to an argument. It is merely a loud ending, right? He won. They just barked, right? So in verses 24 and 25, they invite him. No, they're ordering him. Don't you see that? "Give glory to God. This man's a sinner." That's a command. Get in line. And he says, he does a pretty good job at not getting involved. "Well, I don't know if he's a sinner, but I can see. I can see." Now, as the argument goes on, clearly the blind man does believe that Jesus is not a sinner. He has an opinion about that, but he doesn't engage in that. He's not going to fight with them at that point. So they charge him to incriminate himself, it seems like, asking for, "Tell us again, let me hear it again so that I can find more holes or poke more holes or find the problems." And he just has this lovely, humorous response. "Why? I already told you. Why do you want to hear it again? And do you want to be his disciple?" And they snap back with who they are and what he is. Do you see that? They reviled him, saying, "You are his disciple, but we are the disciples of Moses." As Christians, we do not describe and define ourselves by saying we are not something. Now, sometimes it's easy to describe, well, we don't do some bad things. But if you get in the habit of describing yourself as "I don't do bad things," then you're just dwelling on the bad stuff and you don't have any idea what you do, right? So we need to be, we are Christians who are like this and do this. But sometimes well, we don't do that sin, we don't have that teaching, we don't do that denomination, we aren't like that place in the country, we aren't like that place in the world, we aren't like that side of the political spectrum, and we don't vote this way, and we would never do that, and we are not that. And so I've seen people, they define themselves still on the worldly standard, right? They're not comparing themselves to God, they're just saying, I'm not like the world in worldly terms. We're of Moses and you're of, and they're just attacking him in that sort of a way. You are guilty by association with Jesus, and we are holy by association with Moses. And I can imagine myself getting lured into making that kind of a, well, you go to the wrong church and I go to the right church kind of an argument. And that doesn't prove anything. Jesus deferred that conversation with the Samaritan woman. Hey, a time is coming when it's going to be neither on this mountain or in that temple. And he gave a better answer than just what building to go to. But they backed themselves into a corner. All they're left with is foolish and reckless attacks. Oh, you're just a sinner and you can't tell me anything. And this is the fruits of their unrighteousness coming out, right? I like his answer. God doesn't listen to ugly people. I can see. If he can make me see, and that's a miracle, and God doesn't give miracle powers to losers, then he must not be a loser. He just builds this wonderful, articulate, logical, progressive argument. I just love it. And what's really interesting is, you know, this is maybe the only time in the Gospel of John I'll say the most important person to talk to in this chapter wasn't Jesus. The blind man was the person everyone should be talking to. Jesus is at this much at the beginning and this much at the end. So the chapter is mostly about the blind man. Everyone should have been talking to the blind man, and he's the one person they wouldn't talk to and they wouldn't listen to, and he has the clearest, most honest and sincere and helpful and enlivened, life-giving kinds of statements. And he's the one person that they didn't want to talk to. And it's a lot like how the light comes into the world, John chapter 3, and they don't want a part of it. And the cockroaches scurry when the light comes on. And here's the blind man trying to shine the light of Jesus. So they weren't having a conversation with this man at this point. They were just building arguments to condemn, finding new ways to attack. That's not a conversation. All right, we'll close the chapter now. How am I doing on time? Jesus, having heard that they cast him out and having found him, said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" And he answered, "And who is he, sir, that I may believe in him?" Jesus said to him, "You have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you." And he said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshipped him. Jesus said, "For judgment I came into the world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind." Some of the Pharisees near him heard these things and said to him, "Are we also blind?" And Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you say, 'We see,' your guilt remains." This is one of the complicated moments of Jesus' words. Here, blindness is the good thing somehow. Usually blindness is referring to something bad. Think about this statement when the man asks Jesus, "Who is he?" What an intelligent question. You know, like, are you the one I'm supposed to be listening to? Maybe he recognizes the voice. Maybe he knows that this is the Jesus who did the thing, but there's still this sense of asking, and is this right? I think that that's impressive. Jesus says to him, "You have seen him. And it is he who is speaking to you." And I wonder if he's talking about, you know, the half, past tense. I wonder if you saw me at the beginning of this chapter. I mean, you didn't see me, but you saw me. You have seen him, and he is the one who is talking to you. The blind man is the only one who saw the truth the whole time. And that is actually part of the storytelling culture of the world. If you need, you know, in the Greek myths, if you need to know the future, you go to the blind man because the blind man has the sight. And it's just kind of this interesting thing, the way some of our stories are told that way. But that's literally what's going on here. The blind man, who is mostly able to see during the story, The blind man saw Jesus when he didn't have eyes to do it. And the blind man now can see clearly when everyone is walking around stumbling in the darkness of their own foolish, self-directed words and questions and arguments. And at the very end, when the Pharisees say, "Are we blind? We're not blind, are we? If you were blind, you would have no guilt." That's complex. I don't want to be blind, but I definitely don't want to have guilt. You know, no one is asking here, does Jesus want me to, you know, take my eyes out and I'll be a holier person? We know that that's not what he's talking about. What is blindness? I'm going to go for some ideas about what is blindness here. Blindness is the absence of pride. In this story, the blind man is the only one without pride. Oh, and Jesus, but he's the only one without pride. And everyone else is full of themselves, and they can see, and they know what they're doing. And that means that they're spiritually blind, I guess. The blind one has the willingness to submit and to claim, but the ones who claim their sight are all messed up. I'm going to close. I had a few different ways of closing out this lesson, but I want to close by looking at 1 John 1. And that's just a nice way of wrapping up this theme of blindness. There are a lot of ways, and that's what I was really excited about when I was looking at this lesson. We have bad conversations because we begin them with wrong motives. Who's at fault? And we inadvertently begin things by closing people off. How can I show that I am right and I'm closing people off? And that's not the guy, or I know what's going on, or this is a problem, or so-and-so did something that I didn't like. And none of us are talking to the person around whom this thing involves. And I need to get over myself and go up to the person and say, you know, I think I offended you. Or, what's even harder, to say it with love, you really offended me when? And having that conversation, and they're just having all the conversations around that guy. There's so many times that we do that kind of a thing. Then there's the outside circumstance. So it's the Sabbath day, which means I'm just going to get in an argument and fight, is almost the way that the Pharisees were taking it. And we have our rules and we have our ideas, and we need to learn to listen and not let those outside things block our ears. We might find out at the end of good, sincere listening, no, this is trash and it's wrong. And what I thought was right is still right. But we should listen so that we can make a good judgment in that. And we need to not be full of ourselves. Thinking about the blind man still has guilt. Sorry, I'm drawing a blank. Jesus says it backwards. Since you say that you see, your guilt remains. Okay, let's look at 1 John 5 through 10, and then we'll close. This isn't a psalm, but it has some rhythm to it, and I think it's neat. This is the message that we have heard from him and proclaimed to you, that God is light and in him is no darkness at all. If we say we have fellowship with him while we walk in darkness, we lie and don't practice the truth. But if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship with one another. And the blood of Jesus, his son, cleanses us from all sin. If we say that we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. If we say that we have not sinned, we make him a liar and his word is not in us. I think that this speaks to that concept. The man who was, I'm not even going to go who was blind, wasn't blind. I'm just going to go with the text here, because the way Jesus says it at the end of chapter 9, I always get tongue-tied. To say, I know what I'm doing, and I've got it right, and I can see, and I know what's going on, is the failure here. The right thing is saying, I have done wrong, and I need the light. And that doesn't say, well, I can just keep doing wrong and, you know, keep saying I'm doing wrong. Chapter 2 says, stop sinning. Like, stop it. That's the first thing he says. Don't sin. But what you need to do to be a child of God is to say, I have sinned. I have done this. Open my eyes. Help me to see. Shine the light. And when we do that, it's done. I mean, that's the thing. A man washed his eyes and he saw. When we speak out that way and we call to Christ in that way, He fixes us and he helps us. There's a whole number of things that we need to do to obey. We need to be baptized and we need to not do certain things and we need to do certain things. But the simplicity of what John is trying to get into our hearts here is you need to admit, listen, and confess. And when you do, the light is there for you and you can be healed and you can be lifted up and we can have what is right. And we can get out of the world that is enjoying all of its arguments and its fights. And we can be kicked out of the world with the blind man and have a really peaceful life walking in the light. So my prayer is that that's what I will do. That's not always easy for me. I'm tired of this mess. Getting out of it isn't always easy for me, but I'm tired of that mess, and I don't want to talk that way to people, and I don't want you to talk that way. I don't want you to talk that way to me, but I don't want you to talk that way to anybody, so that we can walk in the light and have that peace that Jesus is offering us to open our eyes so that we can see. May God bless us in our effort to leave that world, listen to the truth, and to speak truth as well. Thank you.